I learnt one particularly interesting thing, that a head for heights is often acquired by experience. There are, of course, many, many people who have no head for heights and can never acquire them. But it is largely a matter of self-discipline and practice. It was noticeable that in the course of the 2 weeks of the course, the standard of performance in this respect, which included sliding down a rope over a deep valley, improved to a marked extent. I have never had occasion to use the field craft in which we were trained, but if I ever did at my advanced age, I would certainly remember the importance of using a veil at night, because the luminous nature of the human face is something which is very noticeable at night.
Did you not use blacking on your face?
No. Because I mean, this would give you away the moment you came out into the light. I remember particularly one evening when two OSS officers joined us. One named Williamson, who was a career State Department man, who had recently been in the consulate, the US consulate at Tangier, and was obviously knowledgeable about the current preparations for the North African landings, Operation Torch. I was fairly up to date in what we were told in London, and I had always understood that the main obstacle was the shortage of shipping required for this vast piece of maritime transport. US troops coming across the Atlantic and British troops coming from the UK through the Straits of Gibraltar. I was talking quietly in the corner to Williamson and told him and asked if how the shipping position was developing. He said, shipping is no longer an obstacle. I remember this remark as turning point understanding of the war. And from this moment onwards, I never had any doubt of an Allied victory. I then unexpectedly, just before the end of the course, had telegraphic orders to return at once to London. I realized this meant that they had decided on my next job, and immediately went south. At this time, the head of the organization, known as by the symbol CD, was Sir Charles Hambrough, banker, who had previously been head of the Scandinavian section of SOE, for which he was particularly well suited, owing to the Hambrough's Scandinavian origin and their connection with all the leading people in Norway and Denmark. There had been a section called the Chiefs of Staff Office, which consisted of one full colonel, three lieutenant colonels, and at least four majors, who had made themselves extremely unpopular within SOE by constantly issuing orders in the name of the chief. As often happens, when the structure of an organization is changed, they lent too far in the opposite direction. And Hambrough said he would like me to become his assistant, doing all the work which had previously been done by this large Chiefs of Staff section.
So you were to be a substitute for
that? I was a substitute for about eight people. Yes. And so I was kept busy from then onwards.
Had you had experience in that type of work before?
Well, when you've been a lawyer in a large and busy law firm, you really get experience in many things. But I can't say I'd ever been I'd never been assistant to the head of an organization. No. My firm had, among other things, we were solicitors to Hambrough's bank. I knew Charles Hambrough, and he knew all about me, and I think it worked from the SOE point of view. It worked out quite well. Later on, after after Torch had been completed, Colonel Glynn, another banker from the city and head of Glynn Mills, who had been in Algiers, returned to London and joined me as joint assistant to the chief. I remained in that position for about a year, when I was transferred to the planning section, which owing to the growth of the organization and its range of activities was becoming vital.
Before we move on, could I ask you about Hamborough himself? What kind of a man was he to work with?
Hamborough was a splendid man whom everybody liked and extremely able. But his one great drawback was that he had too many things to do outside SOE. He remained a director of the Bank of England, a director of Hamborough's Bank, chairman of the Great Western Railway, and it was quite impossible for him to do all the jobs that he had on his plate at that time.
Did that mean that so much more devolved on you?
Well, he was, yes. I mean, he was very often not there when he should have been. And it didn't mean that I could give orders in his name, but I could at least sort of keep the wheels moving. And I had to know everything that the chief knew, some of which, of course, was very top secret. I always enjoyed, should we resume? I enjoyed that period because although SOE in 1942/43 was only beginning its major expansion and building up into an effective organization, it was weak at the top, because nobody realized how large the resistance movements in Europe and ultimately Asia were going to be, and although we all knew that relations with government departments and the three armed services were unsatisfactory, because SOE had been in existence since 1940 and had achieved very little, we were beginning to realize that it had a great potential, and it was difficult to persuade more conventional people, particularly in the three armed services, that this was the case.
Were there any particular individuals who are difficult to convince?
Yes.
Can you name them?
I will name in particular one. I won't put him first. Nobody disputes that regular members of the armed forces seldom approve or recognize the value of irregular activities, whether guerrillas or underground activities. So, Brigadier Gubbins, later General Sir Colin Gubbins,